Hello, everybody, and welcome to next episode of Venture Vitals, where we talk to great tech startup founders in healthcare, in digital health. We talk to investors, we talk to physicians, professionals that are fascinated with digital medicine and what this world of future healthcare is gonna surprise us with. So today, it's my pleasure to welcome Anton Caballero from Heuristic Startup from Spain. Hello, Anton.
Hello, Thomas. Hello, Benny.
And of course, it's my pleasure to have with me my co-host, Yevgeny Shvarov. So Yevgeny, nice to have you here again.
Yes, hi everyone, it's a pleasure as well, and I hope today you will know you will hear yet another amazing story on how to do anything, how to introduce innovation in digital health. And actually we sure that it will inspire you to start today, not to like postpone it. Yes.
Okay, so Yevgeny is basically saying, just do it right now, no time to lose. Time is to act now, but if you want to act smarter, just listen to our conversation with Anton, especially if you are into doing business with hospitals. This sounds crazy, but it's one of the best niches I know of. Of course, being in hospital, immediately I get these nasty feelings, you know, broken bones and surgeries, but Anton, maybe you could introduce yourself and why you are fascinated with hospitals and what kind of business proposal you have for hospitals in EU countries, US, around the world.
Sure. So thanks for the introduction. As you mentioned, my name is Anton. I'm from the north part of Spain, from Bilbao, actually. And like most of the healthcare entrepreneurs, right, I started because of a personal story when a nurse made a wrong identification to my grandfather. So it's a touching story because every time that I pitch in events or kind of healthcare acceleration programs or whatever, there is always someone that has a similar story with an identification error. So relating with your question, working with hospitals is something sweet and spicy. Sweet is because you are working in something that saves lives, which is amazing, right? When someone comes and tells you like, hey, I really like what you are doing, you will save millions of lives doing this. And spicy because like selling to hospitals is one of the most or toughest places to be, right? Because of the time that it takes to make a sale to one hospital that is normally from 6 months to 15 months, and you need to go through different areas like GDPR, integration, C-level of the hospital, and stuff like that. And the top of the cake, like the cherry of the cake, is that when you are doing that process, the person that you are talking with in the hospital can leave. And you need to start again the whole process with a new guy or woman coming to the hospital. But as I said, it's actually one of the best business to be in. Because first, once you are in a hospital, it's more likely that you are going to stay there. And second, because of the patient and the health staff that you help using your solution. So that could be a short intro. And for those that don't know what we are doing, is basically Heuristic is a software solution to identify and manage patients using fingerprints and artificial intelligence. So we are not Facebook. We are not going to sell your data and get rid of it. We are basically going to save your life using your fingerprint.
Thank you. And mm-hmm. This is very exciting. The idea you come to the market in digital health and introduce to hospital looks very simple, like identification of a patient. Just please share if this is still a problem. So I mean, is it not solved? I mean, so hospitals exist how many years? Like 200, like 300. So they are everywhere. And is it really an issue? And yeah, how your solution can help?
Yeah, so this is quite a good question, right? Because when you talk about patient identification errors, not a lot of people realize how big this is, right? So to put some numbers here, the WHO says that you have 10% of chances of receiving a wrong identification every time that you go to a hospital, right? So one out of 10 times you are going to get wrong identified in a hospital. In Europe, over 500 million patients suffer wrong identification errors every year in hospitals, with a market cost of over 200 billion euros. In the US, over 500 million patients suffer identification errors every year, and with a market cost of over $1 trillion. But the most shocking part of it is that most of these identification errors, right, are happening because of the current patient identification solutions. So these are basically like the healthcare card, in the case of the US, the driver license, and these ID bracelets, right? So first of all, let's picture this. Imagine that you are in a sunny beach and suddenly you suffer a stroke, right? The ambulance will pick you up and you carry you to the hospital. So something that something that I discovered when I started with Euristic is that basically during that process, there is not a single hospital in the world able to identify you if you don't have your healthcare card with you. So basically, if you are allergic to penicillin and you are arriving to the hospital and you suffer a stroke, some of the first drugs that you are going to receive have penicillin. So you are going to have an allergic reaction. And of course, there are also some cases that elderly people or people with mental issues go to the hospital, they die in the hospital, and the hospital has no clue who are those patients. And it takes time until they find the families or whatever. Then in the case of the healthcare cards, that's like the first situation where no healthcare entity in the world is able to identify you. And then in the second one, so the healthcare cards are the number one fraud solution in the world because patients swap them, right? So of course in Europe we do have public healthcare, but there are some issues with immigrants because, for example, just as a funny case, in one hospital that we are working with, one Chinese guy went to have knee surgery, and in the medical record appeared that six months before, he went to the gynecologist, which basically is biologically impossible, right? So this is a fraud in public healthcare entities, but for private, in order to receive like this kind of free treatments, right? Like saying that maybe two brothers sharing the same car or whatever. And the third issue is with the bracelets, because first of all, they have printing issues and they were off. So basically they cannot scan the QR code. Then the second problem is with the names, right? For example, in Spain, we have two surnames, right, that appear, for example, I don't know, Manuel Rodriguez Sanchez, right? But for example, in the north of Czech Republic, of the north of Europe and in the US, you only have one surname. So you have like the typical problem of John Smith, right? In the same room could be like many John Smith, and you don't have a clue about who is John Smith, right? So you can make a wrong identification errors. There are actually some hospitals in the US that told us that they are afraid of putting a patient with the same name and surname in the same room. Then, of course, the healthcare staff providing the wrong bracelet to the patient. Then there are some patients that, some situations that they have to cut the bracelet. For example, when you go to the operation room, the bracelet cannot go in because of sanitary issues. So there are some situations. These are situations that nurses and doctors told us. So basically it was a patient unconscious in the operation room and they didn't have a clue of who that patient was because they got the bracelet. It was a bin full of bracelet and they didn't know who the patient was. So I can go on and on talking about these situations, But at the end of the day, what we discovered is that actually the best way to identify you is with your fingerprint, because you always have with you is unequivocal, is different, even if you have a twin. It could save millions of lives, because what is better than when you have a doubt about if that's the correct patient, putting the fingerprint and obtaining the medical record in a matter of seconds? So that's a little bit the pitch that we always show to the people.
Well, Anton, I'd buy that immediately if I had a hospital and I needed a great system to identify patients. At the beginning, I liked, by the way, your sweet and spicy description of the doing business with hospitals, and I couldn't come up with a better set of adjectives than sweet and spicy. So now, sorry, you ruined all my favorite meals were sweet and spicy meals, because now I get this hospital image in my mind. But anyway, it's a good combination of words. But at the beginning, you also mentioned, when you described what you offer, your product, artificial intelligence. So my question is, where is artificial intelligence? What it does on top of simply making sure that the fingerprint just corresponds to that fingerprint in our database. So maybe you could expand on the role that AI plays in your product.
Sure. I mean, I cannot go really deep into this because we are working on a patent of it. But what we discovered when we started with our solution is that biometric fingerprint identification, right, weren't developed at all. So basically, they were just making a one-one comparison. This is, for example, like your smartphone, right? When you put your fingerprint, the fingerprint gets saved in the smartphone. And when you put your fingerprint, it compared to that fingerprint, right? That's one-one. But what happens, for example, when your fingerprint is wet, dirty, blonde stain, or whatever? It's not going to work. So basically, what we have developed is a neural network, like artificial intelligence, deep learning, that basically, first of all, is able to identify fingerprints in adverse situations. That's something that haven't been done before. And second, is basically making a one-end comparison. This means like a comparison of one fingerprint against millions of fingerprints in less than 2 seconds, and with a really, really, really high accuracy, like around 96, 97. And by the way, this is a question that I always get asked. Having a 95, 96, or 97% of accuracy doesn't mean that we are going to fail 3 out of 100 times. It means that we can say that 2 fingerprints are similar with a 95% of accuracy, which is huge. I mean, it's basically 100% of accuracy working with it. That's something that a lot of people told us, like, yeah, fingerprints are nothing new, but when they go deep into the technology, for example, the investors making a due diligence or having like these huge awards and grants for disruptive technology, is because this is something that haven't been done before, not just in Europe, but in Europe, US and Canada are the countries that we look for. And Latin America, of course.
Mm-hmm. Anton, I want to follow the discussion about sweet and spicy relationships with hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
I like this expression. Actually, our podcast also, we hope it will be helpful to early stage digital health startups that will face this problem, how to get into the hospital as well. And we had a pleasure to have you and Evristik in Celestinos in this year, in this batch. And you are known as the startup that managed the most of pilots with hospitals during incubation this year. So could you please share your advice and maybe your approach, how could What is the strategy? How startups could manage to get to hospitals? Not only like talk to them, but really like convert these conversations and like manage to start pilots and really introduce your technology to the hospital. Yeah.
Sure. So, of course, a lot of pilots have big responsibilities, right? You need to. It's not something that that you can manage easily, right? So, first of all, when you are selling something to a hospital, it's not about the solution, right? I mean, you can have like the best solution in the world, that if it's not solving a real problem and saving money to hospital, they are not going to buy. The most important part is basically to save them money, because most of the hospitals in Europe are public, right? But not all of them have enough resources to buy technologies that can't make them cool, right? Like having like the most beautiful technology or whatever, right? So at the end of the day, they are every day catching up with files, right? They have one file one day, they need to delete or throw water to that file like that every day, right? So at the end of the day, they are just focusing about cost. So my advice to all the startups would be to understand first how much money you are solving to healthcare entities. So the first meetings with hospitals shouldn't be about selling your technology, should be understanding the problem and understanding how much money it costs. So to put this into perspective, my first five meetings with hospitals, the people that I was talking with, they told me after 1 hour or 2 hours of talk, I don't know if I'm helping you or if I am throwing something negative against you not to start with the company, right? And it was like, no, this is perfect. I mean, first of all, I really want to know how did you feel about the problem. Then I want to know how you feel about our technology. And then I want to feel how the problem it is. Because then having these meetings with, for example, first of all, with nurses, doctors, then with the C-level of the hospital, then with the technical people, so you have like the whole picture of it, you can answer for future meetings. Because at the end of the day, if you are doing this for a couple of months, when you have the next meetings with the C-level of the hospital and they tell you this is not really a problem, you can just specify the areas where they are having this problem, quantify them and tell them how the people are feeling about this. Because the 90% of the problems of one hospital are the 90% of the problems of the rest of the hospitals. And they have many things in similar. Maybe the areas are different, but in our case, the problem is the same.
John, you highlighted the importance of cost cutting as a good sales strategy with public hospitals or with any hospitals, and I am aware of a few large claims cases that happened at a number of hospitals, including recently one in Prague, where you know there's been a there was a mistake, an error, so they basically aborted the pregnancy with the wrong woman, and also there were cases where kidneys were transplanted from the wrong patient, etc. And I can imagine in the US especially, the damage claims could reach enormous heights and could soar infinitely. So probably just avoiding such a high-profile claim case would cover your solution like 10 times, 100 times easily. So how do you build your business case when you talk to hospitals, incorporating the likelihood of such cases and damage claims that could, you know, it's a public hospital, it won't ruin it, but it would be a huge dent in the financial statements.
Sure. First, something that I always like to emphasize, right? Those identification errors that appear on media are less than 1% of the real errors that happen every day in healthcare entities, like providing the wrong drug, almost making the wrong operation or whatever, right? So we categorized the cost in three different fields. So first of all, is comparing directly with bracelets, right? So the price per bracelet goes from 50 cents to 1 euro. This includes the bracelet, the ink, and the toner or the printer of the bracelet. Then when you make a wrong identification error in Spain, right? Every day that you expend an extra day in the healthcare entity costs the hospital 1,500 euros. And in the US, 10,000 euros per day. And then, of course, these kind of situations where the hospital needs to pay right to the patient for making their own identification error are paid by the insurance company, right? And the insurance companies are paid by the amount from the hospital by the amount of identification errors that they make every year. For example, from 0 to 10,000, they pay X amount. From 10,000 to 100, X2, right? It's something that goes up. So our claim is that basically the WHO, as I mentioned before, says that you have 10% of probabilities of having an identification error, right? So if one hospital attends 1 million patients a year, they are going to make 100,000 identification errors a year. So, and this is all public data. I mean, you can look it in papers or in the internet. So, so what we say is that if we reduce those identification errors, are the hospitals going to be paying less? And that's when you start having something really interesting. But here happens two things. So when you are selling, right, the market is divided in two for me, right? The early adopters and the mass market, right? So at the beginning, you need to work with early adopters. These are like super bold people that like champions that like your technology, want to implement it or whatever, right? And the mass market is basically when these early adopters go to a healthcare congress and they say that your technology is amazing, they are the fans that follows you, right? So in Europe, what we found out is that all the countries are different, right? The healthcare development are in different stages. For example, of course, I don't want to name countries, but there are some countries that are not choosing the bracelets, so actually can adopt our technology right now. Then there are some countries that implemented bracelets right now, so they cannot adopt a new technology because they already spent all the budget in bracelets. There are some countries that are developed that have implemented the bracelets for a long time and see the adverse events, so they want to implement another technology. So we focus in the second and in the fourth, right? In the ones that they are not using anything and they can buy a technology. And in the ones that already implemented the bracelets for a long time and they want to, and they see the adverse event so they can find it. So yeah, there are some hospitals that are having these issues, but they don't have the resources or they are not in the stage or adopting our technology, right? So it happened to us many times that there are some hospitals that like the technology, but they are not in the stage of implementing it. So it's like saying, okay, maybe we are not in the same cycle of life. Let's maintain our contact and in the future we can work with it. So basically right now we are working with these super bold early adopters that want to innovate, they want to be the first one, they want to be like the top of the top implementing the newest technologies, and we focus on them. And once we have the paper that basically proves all the claims that we make, and the rest will come, because it's not a matter of if they are going to join or not, is the matter of when they are going to join. Because we are able to identify patients in situations that they currently can't. We are cost efficient comparing to the bracelet. We don't create plastic waste. And of course, we are saving lives. I mean, it's a matter of time that everything changes to biometrics.
This is amazing, and it's great to hear that innovators are not only like in startups but in hospitals as well. And Anton, actually a lot of digital health startups, they introduce devices to the market. You are not exception, right? And so, and also every time they like innovators go with innovation with devices, they face what is called different kinds of certification. And in case of medical devices, it's like FDA and CE mark, and I'm not sure if you need like with if you in your case this is the demanded certification. So maybe you're lucky not to avoid this, but in any way you have any kind of differences certification. Could you please share what is this situation in your case?
So we, of course, we made our research in Europe and in the US, and we are not a medical device, neither for the European Union, or we don't need to be certified for the FDA, right? But of course, something that we are that we work really hard on is in the GDPR, right? GDPR and in the US, the HIPAA and the BIPA, right? Because of course, we never have access to the patient's information. And those are like the only regulations that we need to follow. And we've been working really hard since day one of them. And of course, we are compliant with all the regulations that we need to apply. But luckily, we don't need to go through a medical device regulation. Maybe in the future, and this is something that maybe in the future we will look for, but not right now.
So you are lucky because I know and I also invested in a few startups that have to go through regulations quite strict, requiring clinical studies and it takes ages and lots of money. So yeah. I think it's a reasonable strategy for a new startup who wants to make things easier to look for a solution that does not require a medical device category certification. But still, what it will require also in your case is money and finance to so that you can grow. So can you maybe share how you managed to get money to fuel a heuristic, your business? Maybe you could tell us, how long have you been in the business and how you managed to secure financing for the growth? Because I can imagine the hospitals, it takes time, as you said, it takes up to 15 months to close a deal, provided the hospital is in the right life stage, as you explained. And still, you needed to build a solution, started with some leads. So I expect you didn't have sales from day one. So maybe you could help somebody who is about to build a startup, wants to sell to hospitals. What's ahead, what they should expect in terms of financial needs and realities?
Sure. Just one thing to add is what you said, Thomas. So basically, not being certified by a medical device have two sides of the coin, right? The first side is, of course, you can go quicker and you are not going to invest such much money to get certified and make these kind of clinical trials. But the other side of the coin is like most of the hospitals, when they buy a medical device, they get the reimbursement of it, right? So the hospital is not going to get that part. And this is something also why we are expecting to kind of try to be in the future. Because of course, if they get the reimbursement, it's gonna be even cheaper, the technology for them, right? And as you mentioned, asking your second question, the best advice I can give you since day one in your startup, especially in healthcare, is try to find the best consultant companies that work on a success fee basis. So basically, you work with a couple of them, you make a list of all the grants and all the public funding that is available, and you go step by step obtaining. So to put this into perspective, right? We can claim, and I touch wood. I don't know if in Czech you have like the, in Czech you do it with the teeth, right? Like teeth, right? That not to wish bad luck. But in Spain we do it with the good. So basically we can claim that we have 100% of accuracy on obtaining all the grants. So the grant that we apply, the grant that we obtain, and hopefully we'll keep this way. So for example, to put this into perspective, when we were in Celestinus, we had 900,000 euros in grants and awards. So we didn't dilute anything. So everything was like win and participating in startup programs, obtaining awards, obtaining grants or whatever, right? So since Calestinus to today, we obtain additional 500K in non-dilutive grants. And we applied to grants worth 3.4 million. So we applied to the EIC accelerator. Well, we are applying on the 3rd of October, but we are almost done with all the documentation and everything. And we applied to one grant that appeared this year, which is called CEDETI Multipaís. It's basically a Spanish grant. And we signed a contract with one Italian hospital. So it will be like from the EIC part, 2.5 million, and from the CEDETI part, 600K, non-dilutive, and just 100% grant. So, of course, the timelines are super long. You need to pay people. You need to do all your stuff. So, yeah, the best, and that's something that I didn't have since day one, is working with consultant companies. It can make your life easier. And, of course, and this is something that just happens in Europe. And I have a really fun analogy. For example, if you are in the US, right, and you want to create a rocket, you will go to one investor and you will tell them, hey guys, I want to create a rocket. And they will tell you, that's amazing. Here is your money. Do the rocket and then show it to me. In Europe, if you go to one investor and you tell them, hey guys, I want to build a rocket, they will tell you like, okay, can you show me the rocket? Is your rocket making money? So basically when the rocket is making money, you have this team, you are selling this to NASA or to SpaceX or whatever, please come to me and I will invest in you 50K, you know? So, and that's a huge difference. And I can argue with anyone that digital health is the toughest space to be in Europe, because normal investors don't want to invest in health, in digital health, because of the timelines of the sales process, right? And the med tech or life science investors cannot invest in digital health because we are not the life science or med tech startup, right? So we are basically between the word and the sword. Of course, it's possible because we are almost done with the round. So basically, hopefully we will close it by September, October. But it's ultra tough. And this is something that everyone should know about.
Anton, this is really great. So what we hear are the good, really good news to digital health startups in Europe, that they can like follow your example. They can get some money, some funding, non-dilutive funding from numerous European organizations. This is great to know. But my question is, I think, which is also very important, which market to follow with the digital health startups? So clearly, I anticipate you like started in Europe, but is this your like main market, or is there like maybe a primary market for your business? Could you please share your like?
Of course, like the primary market is always the US. It's the market that invests most money. So, for example, something that I don't know, like how many countries we are in Europe, right? But everyone has their own regulation. If you are selling to the US, the same regulation applies to the 55 different countries that make the US, right? So that's simple to sell. Here, of course, we have different languages in each country, different regulations, different cultures. So it's basically like selling to different places, you know? when we are part of the same of Europe, right? So yeah, that's why, because of course the sales are faster and because the market is larger. But yeah, I think that the startup should focus in markets that pay first. Let me give you an example. So I think that there are two kinds of selling your solution, right? So the first one is like selling in your own country, and when you get big in your own country, go to the others. I did it totally opposite. So I thought that our company was international. So I don't call Heuristic a Spanish company. I call it a world company. So it doesn't matter if I sell to Spain, Portugal, Italy, Germany, US, Israel, or whatever. Basically, with the same technology and just sending there the devices and making the implementation or whatever, we can actually implement the technology in about 1 week. And it doesn't matter the place. Why should I be fighting against my own country when I can just send the devices to another country that is willing to pay earlier and just pick a plane, and 3 hours or 5 hours in a plane, I will be there, we will make this the sale, and I will come back home? So, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you have to sell. And I know many people that, Spanish people that started selling in Latin America, in Romania, in the north of Europe or wherever, because the first customer were there. I mean, you need to find your first customers, and then the others will come all the way up.
Anton, so great for your lessons you share. So it's really valuable. But when I read not just textbooks about entrepreneurship, but I actually talk to startups, usually they talk about the importance of having the right team, finding the right people. And once you have the right people, then somehow success will follow. It's, you know, there are obstacles, there are different ideas, different products you can make, different and gradually with the right people you hopefully find the right product market fit and a good strategy. So I wanted maybe to ask you, how did you put together your team? What have been the challenges in managing talent, or have you encountered any major difficulties, problems you had to deal with on your way? Because it so far, it looks that, okay, I'm a startup. I'll just go to the hospital, look around, observe about the issues. I get something, either it's certified or not. Then I create a startup, apply for various grants, join various incubation programs, and that's it. But maybe it's not all the recipe. There are some ingredients like people, like operations, willingness to pivot, you know, change and adapt. So maybe you could share your recipe, something that you would like others to know about how you have been on such a successful track for all those years.
Well, I will call it successful when we exit the company or when we make an IPO, right? We are just swimming in the ocean. Let's call it this way. So, I think that the team is everything in one company. I mean, you need to have the right culture and you need to have the right people. But first, the first thing that you need to do, and that's something that it took me a couple of years to realize, is that you need to see what you can offer, right? So when you start a company, you cannot offer money because you don't have it, right? You have shares, right? So which are the correct people that you need to hire? So junior people have no experience. They have plenty of time, but no money. Senior people have plenty of money, but not a lot of time, right? So what we thought is, okay, maybe right now we don't need like juniors that working in the company, because for sure they are going to break everything and we will need to change the solution a couple of times. Maybe let's go for super senior people that are amazing, that basically maybe they are bored in their work and they need a challenge. So maybe they can work a couple of hours per day. They will build animation technology, and we can work from there. And maybe in the future, once we rise the round, we can hire them, and then we will hire junior people from these people. Because then you have money, you can hire the juniors, and you have this structure with senior people that can manage the unit. That's something that, of course, it takes years, but we made it, right? We have really, really, really talented people in the company that, work because they like the solution, they have some shares, they are willing to keep their jobs, even reducing their salaries to work with us. Because they love the challenge, they love the possibility of a scale of our solutions. And this is like people like married with two kids making like 90 or 100K per year that want to leave that job and come work with us. And I really think, and this is something that I heard from Steve Jobs, and I really loved, is if you hire talented people, they should tell you what to do. You cannot tell them what to do. So, of course, I know where I'm good at. So, I need to find people that are good in other areas, right? So, you delegate them the solution, and okay, it's your problem. Of course, you need to supervise something just to see everything is working with the timelines and stuff like that. But they are the responsibles of each area. And and of course, a really difficult part there is to manage the talent because everyone wants to be the CTO, but they have to realize that maybe they are not the correct person to be a CTO. And that is something that you learn also all the way up, that the CTO that you started is not going to be the CTO on your seed round, and definitely is not going to be your CTO in the Series A, you know? Because a CTO at the beginning is programming everything. A CTO in seed stage is not programming at all. It's basically managing and with documentation. And in a Series A, it's basically making that work but double, you know? And not all the CTOs are willing to give up programming, you know, because it's what they like. So I really think that you need to be like moving different stuff for each stage. And that's my two things for the people. But of course, you need to learn it yourself. Learning by doing is the best way to do it, like hitting your head against the wall every day.
This is amazing. Yeah, thanks for sharing, Anton. About the team, people is everything. Yes, we all agree. I wanted to ask another very sensible for startups question. So, and this about like investment and you shared that already that you managed to get some significant grant money, which is very important for startups, like because it's a non-dilutive capital. But I also mentioned that you're raised around now. Can you maybe share the history? What we know in venture, we have this pre-seed, seed, Series A. Where you are on this journey, and also we all know that now it's kind of tough time to raise money. So how you manage this? Who are your investors? Whether it's makes sense to refer to angels or to maybe syndicates or family offices? Could you please share?
Sure. So basically we are something that I always want to emphasize is that we receive like so much money in non-dilutive grants, right? That we were in a tough spot, right? Because we were too late for a pre-seed and too early for a seed. So it was even more difficult the journey, right? So we call it this round a pre-seed. It's a 1.4 million round. We already have 750 committed. Of course, we cannot say names right now, but let's say this way. So we have some of the investors are corporates that they are in the healthcare space, maybe integrating software, selling software to healthcare entities or whatever. We have some VCs. We have one crowdfunding platform. And we have angels. especially angels that have been in the healthcare space and stuff like that. So, or people that we know, for example, doctors, nurses. A fun story is, for example, the guy that installed the windows in my home. The windows, I mean, like the windows that you open, right? Not windows in my computer. That guy asked me, like, what the hell are you doing in your room all the day working? And he was like, yeah, I do this. And he was like, okay, can I invest? And for sure. So it's like about finding these champions that feel amazing about your technology or really like it and want to invest. But yeah, it's a combination of everything. At the end of the day, something that you always need to avoid is the dumb equity. For example, investors that are going to force to do things that you are not okay with, or that are going to create like the wrong climate that you are trying to avoid in the relationship between the partners in the company, right? So as far as you get that, and of course, like some kind of weird acceleration programs that they will give you 100K and then you need to pay 70K to enter or stuff like that. You need to avoid all these, and sorry for the expression, all this crap, and focus in the investors that are willing to put some time to help you, or at least put the time, but not be a nightmare, right?
Well, Anton, so far our discussion has been a great piece of learning, even for us, but I'm sure for all those that listen and want to start something big in healthcare, and now they understand that it can be even a problem that seems solved. It isn't really, with a technology that is not the most, you know, recent, has been around, but maybe sprinkled with a bit of you know, AI. And also, it's bizarre how one can be misled by information from media, because I would never expect this wrong ID problem to be of that magnitude. 1 in 10, you know, you don't learn it. No one tells you. It's somehow you feel that once in 10 years there is a big issue where they cut off someone else's leg and that's it, but otherwise all is fine. Especially when you go to a hospital, you don't want to be disturbed by this knowledge that you could be that 1 in 10 that is being misidentified as you entered the emergency unit. I actually did yesterday. I had to take my daughter into a hospital when she fell from a horse. She's fine, but still I had to go through all this identification issues. So I can imagine it could be a real issue. We are now approaching gradually the end, and at the end usually we would like to summarize, you know, make like the 10 points that all startups should know and respect. But maybe instead of that, let me ask you this question. So do you see heuristic a unicorn sooner or later? And what do you think needs to happen so that you get there? Because the market seems to be really big, especially with such high incidence of ID errors. So how could you now grow to achieve that kind of validation?
Sure. So first, one thing to say, you mentioned that the fingerprints have been for a long time, but with this sparkle of AI, it makes the difference. So just to put this into perspective, there was one company using the same devices as we are using. They tried to enter one hospital, and that hospital shut them down in 1 month because the solution wasn't working, right? In our case, we already validated the technology with 5 European hospitals and it works perfectly. So this kind of artificial intelligence really makes the difference. And that's something that is amazing. And we are hardware agnostic, so we can use any kind of hardware in the market. So answering your question, when are we going to ring the bell of the Nasdaq? Hopefully sooner than later. But we really think that this is going to happen when we convert or become the gold standard for patient identification. We really want to be like that solution that when one hospital says, I'm having problems with identification errors, I want to use heuristic. And we want to be like this solution, like, for example, InterSystems or other software companies have fraud problems, tell us, okay, let's implement heuristic. Or software integrators have hospitals all over the world and they say like, hey, let's sell heuristic. So that's when you become the number one. And when it doesn't matter if one Chinese company comes that makes your solution for pennies, that they are going to be actually buying your technology because it means quality and saving lives, you know? So when that becomes, for sure we are going to become a unicorn. And the first stage to do that is gonna finish the next year when we publish this paper with all of these hospitals in the world. That, by the way, is gonna be the first multicentric study in the world in multiple countries around the world comparing the patient safety using bracelets and our technology and also the cost effectiveness. So it's an amazing journey.
Yeah, great. So we are looking forward for this amazing moment. And maybe one of the last my questions is our podcast is not only for digital health startups. We know for sure that venture capitalists watch it thoroughly. Yes, and could you please share where investors can refer to know more about your startup and maybe to participate in the round you're raising now?
Sure. Yeah, of course, you can look for Heuristic in LinkedIn, find my profile, which is Anton Caballero, and send me a direct message. I'm more than happy to answer all those messages. But for sure, we will close the round by the end of September and beginning of October. So be quick.
Yeah, great. And we will share the necessary information in the description to this video. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, if you want to add my email, more than happy to it.
We will add everything. We will add your fingerprints, Anton.
Yeah. And also we are opening the crowdfunding platform in about 1 week or two, approximately. So yeah, basically we can also send you like the link. So small tickets are more than welcome, of like 1,000, 2,000 or whatever. So
okay, we'll be more than happy to include it in the description to our podcast on celestinas.tech website, where we keep the recording as well as on Apple and Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and all other 10 plus platforms. So you'll be everywhere around the world, and I'm also sure that we will help you convince some investors to jump on board, as usually happens during our episodes. So I don't know, Yevgeny, would you like to say some final words? I'm so happy whenever I see Anton, because he greets me in Czech, and he's such an inspiring person, and I'm so happy to see our alumni like Anton to, you know, being successful and making digital medicine happen.
Yeah, I just want to share that it's such a pleasure to run this podcast together with you, Tomáš, because we are talking with real innovators, and maybe in a few years we will see it, the technology everywhere, so which we wish be heaven. Thanks for sharing your like energy, your vision. Thanks for inspiring early stage digital health innovators, and we wish you all this happen and good luck, Anton.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. I mean, thank you guys for inviting me and for creating also Calisthenics. It's an amazing program that, of course, most of the digital health companies should apply. And yeah, so I always like to end saying that, yeah, you have two options. You can help us reduce these identification errors, or you can run the risk of being part of those. So you can select in which ship you want to be.
So thank you, Anton, again. Next time I am on the operating theater just before surgery, I will insist on having heuristic technology, making sure me is me and not just some, you know, armor bands or wristbands. So thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for being great listeners on our next episode of Venture Vitals. We'll be back in about 1 month's time. If you're a startup considering entering digital health, doing business with hospitals, you can apply even now to our 2025 batch at the Celestinus Incubator. Please do so, and have a great time, and enjoy health while it lasts.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.